Good morning. This is Classic Country, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS. This is Community Speaks, and it's being brought to you by The Prescription Shop on Fort Street in Buffalo. I'm Brady Safranik. Thank you for joining me here this morning. And joining me in studio is Sylvia Bruner with the Gatchel Museum. Sylvia, thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me, Brady. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
And the first order of business we're going to jump into here this morning is a recent county commissioners meeting earlier this month. The museum was trying to get the okay to hire a third person. Kind of talk about the decisions that were made at this meeting regarding that third person position.
Well, to back it up even a little bit further, I think a lot of folks already know this, but we had a staff of three working for the last almost 2 years. And our third person, Barbara Hartley, many people know Barb, she had to leave for personal reasons, and so that dropped us down to two people. So we've never been asking for a new position, but there is a hiring freeze in place. And so we had asked that we were granted permission or a leave, I guess, of that hiring freeze to allow us to replace that job. And a lot of folks know, you know, a couple years ago, we actually had a staff of five full-timers, and that just was not supportable, especially after our previous director had left. The budget for the whole county kind of took a hit, and we've been making do with three. And I feel, and I'm obviously a little biased, but I feel like we've been doing a really good job with three people. That first summer, we had no summer staff or help, so the three of us were rotating weekends. And I think it speaks really highly to the dedication of Barb Hartley and Jennifer Romanowski that they didn't kill me by being forced into working and rotating out weekends, plus being there for the regular weekdays. And everybody was tired at the end of the summer, but we kept the doors open. We made it happen, you know? Yeah. So we have a purpose. Anyway, so that was the request, was to be able to replace that position. And now Barb's technical title was store manager. That wasn't a title that was appropriate anymore in reality, but none of ours really are at this
Basically,
point.
Basically, do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And no, I'm not going to go buy new business cards or name tags or anything of that nature. But, you know, Jennifer isn't just the educator. She doesn't say, no, that's not in my job description, therefore I don't do it. If it comes to cleaning the building, helping with guest services, plunging toilets, you know, you're there. You have to do what's necessary to make the place run. And
you mean people aren't lining up to plunge the toilets?
Somehow, no. Yeah, I would love if that was the case, because we have old plumbing in an old building,
sure.
And we have issues, but we try to keep it trucking along. So, no, you're there, and you make it work. And I'm sure a lot of people, especially with like small businesses, they understand that, because if they're the owner of a local business, they're the person that's got to do everything. So,
right.
So at the meeting, at the commissioner's meeting, we had actually brought this up back in December because we kind of knew it was coming down the pipe, and it was tabled then for a little further discussion. And then it came up again at the January 2nd meeting, and, it was a long meeting, and it was absolutely amazing. We had about 45 to 50 people that came from the general public, from the community, to support the museum.
And that's nice to see, because just to kind of put it in perspective, those benches are probably pretty empty for most of the meetings.
I think so. And there were so many people that there weren't actually enough chairs. So there were a number of folks just standing in the back of the room. Yeah, for I think we took about an hour of time. And I think we were scheduled for 15 minutes. So that kind of gives me an idea. There were 19 people from the community who spoke, who, you know, they were given, the commissioners gave opportunity for public comment, and people used that. And all 19 of those folks addressed particular needs that they have identified or recognized of why the museum needs to stay supported. And that was amazing. Our community, I've been saying this for a long time, but it never fails to amaze me at how great it is and what kind of support turns out for the museum.
You know, and speaking of the museum, and this is something I read recently, and I'm trying to think of the name of the magazine. Might have been like True West or something like that. And Buffalo, I think, was number two as far as old Western towns. And one of the criteria for the voting is preserving the historical nature of the town, but also showing it off in the form of museums and something like that. So Jim Gatchel Museum was a big cause for why Buffalo is sitting in that spot right now.
And it always has been. And kudos to the Chamber of Commerce for the work they do in promoting our whole town. And you'll notice that quite often in the work they do to promote Buffalo, the museum is front and center because it's long been an item of pride for our community. No surprise, I've recently been reading a lot about how museums contribute to their local economy, to the community, and there's the kind of hard facts on paper of how for every dollar invested in a cultural site like a museum by its government, you see a return of almost $7. The percentage of people that travel through a town, you have leisure travelers, and then you have leisure travelers specifically interested in cultural, historic sites, things of that nature. Those folks spend, I think it's 38% more on average than other leisure travelers.
Okay.
So you're also looking at the type of folks that do stop tend to spend a little bit more money. They tend to stay a little longer. That trickles down throughout the community, benefiting other businesses. There's also the not so hard facts. Soft facts, is that a thing?
Sure.
I don't know. When people go through a town and they understand, they see how the community embraces and sort of advertises, understands its own identity, its cultural identity and its history, that makes people more likely to stop and to stay or to even consider moving to that place. You know, I think if you speak with some recently retired people who have moved to our community, you're going to hear that they came to town, they maybe went to the jam session at the Occidental, and they met the most friendly group of people there, you know. And then they came through the museum, they went downtown, they had an amazing lunch. And those are the kinds of things that make them want to stay, that put it into their head, hey, this would be a great place to retire to.
Sure.
That community identity that's fostered by your history.
Absolutely. And I would think that the people that stop in town and stay here now, if they're just stopping because this happens to be the place where they got tired and stopped, maybe they don't check out that stuff. But if they're stopping in Buffalo because they've read about it or heard about it, I would imagine the museum is one of the things they'd want to check out.
It is. You know, we've had a pretty amazing museum for 60 years, and it's known. We do some visitor surveys as folks go through, and one of the questions is, how did you learn about the museum, or why did you stop? And it's pretty interesting because the majority of folks write that they were told to visit by a friend or a relative or somebody else, or they'd visited years ago and they wanted to come back. And then there's another portion of people that they see the building and then they see the bronze out front and they stop because they think, what's this about?
Sure.
Learn a little bit more, you know, want to learn more. So.
Yeah, and I think most people that enjoy history love museums, love to go in and see, you know, old artifacts or whatever it is as far as the exhibits that you happen to have on display at that time. So we're talking a little bit about trying to get county commissioners to fill that third position at that last meeting. Tell us a little bit about the budget for the museum, where exactly it comes from, and I guess maybe some certain amounts as far as, you know, filling that position, the difference between where you'd be without it and with it, that sort of thing.
Okay. So all of the museum budget information, it's public information because it is public funding. This is our community's tax dollars at work here. So if people have questions, we're very, very transparent and supportive of trying to answer them or provide information, just as an FYI. And the county website has a lot of information for all of the boards and departments posted. But if you go to, I think it's johnsoncountywyoming.org, I believe, and you look for the museums part on there, you'll see like our financials and meeting minutes and things posted too. It's all public info. So the museum is a little different from a lot of the other county entities in a number of ways. Obviously, we're all kind of our own thing, but we do contribute to our own budgets. So through store sales, through admission, through grants, through donations, through programs, those are all manners in which money comes in through the work of the museum.
Now, with that said, do you have numbers as far as how much of a percentage that covers as far as, you know, like your yearly expenses? Do you, I don't know if you have that number in front of you, but from the stuff that, you're basically making yourself,
right?
How much of the percentage do you have that number handy?
I haven't figured out a percentage.
That's okay.
I have numbers in front of me, but I haven't figured out percentages. And if my math teacher is listening, stop listening. To take a rough guess at it, Brady, looking at the numbers on paper, I'm thinking it's somewhere in the realm of 35%.
Okay.
And I need to sit down and actually hammer that out.
So basically a third of what you need, you guys generate yourselves.
Somewhere in that realm, because, you know, I'm looking at our current budget, and this is showing us what we budgeted for and what we've actually been bringing in. And we're 58% through the year. So in a theoretically perfect world, everything would be at 58% spent or 58% earned. But there's always variations to that. So like this last year, we actually raised our admission fees by a couple of dollars. We went from a $5 adult to a $7 adult. That's not a lot of money, but it is. It can add up. So, you know, I'm looking right now at the admission information, and we had budgeted for $20,000 for the whole fiscal year, which is July 1 through June 30th. So, you know, we're halfway through that fiscal year, and we've already brought in $18,536 of that. So we've brought in 92% of what we anticipated bringing in for admissions. You know, so because this year was when that admission rate changed, that's going to be reflected a little bit differently. Store sales were kind of in that same boat. We've brought in 86% of what we anticipated that we might.
Okay.
You know, and a budget is your best guesstimate.
Sure.
Honestly, you're hopefully looking at some history. And for ours, our bookkeeper has kind of looked at 3 years history because you want to keep it still current. And you try to find an average of, okay, this is what we've brought in, so this is what we think we might. You try to be aware of trends and travelers and what the tourist economy is doing, but you're doing your best to be as accurate as you can. So we're bringing in more at the moment than we kind of anticipated we might, but we've changed.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing, but we've changed our parameters along the way.
So are you saying that when you set this budget, the price was still $5 for admission for an adult, and it went up to $7, and so maybe that's why you're seeing the difference, or no?
Partially, the price, we had already changed the price.
Okay.
But when the budget actually went into place was when our tourist season really kicked off.
Okay.
So we hadn't been pulling in the new admission prices.
Gotcha.
At that point. We had a pretty good idea of what it could gain us because we had ran the numbers in-house saying, well, okay, if you've got 5,000 visitors over 3 months and
Each one's paying $2 more, that's not bad.
So say 3,500 of those are adults at $5 and you raise it to $7, well, there's a gain, you know.
Sure.
So back to some of the other information, I guess. The county funding for the museum, we put together, and by we, I mean the museum board, and they're a county-appointed board. There's five folks on that board. So they, myself, and our bookkeeper all sit down and have some work sessions and try and figure out our budget. And then we go to the county and we say, this is what we think we need to operate successfully, and this is the dollar amount that we want you to provide. And then they come back
and say, no, you don't need that much.
Yeah. They have to consider all of those requests and figure out what is going to fit within their budget. What can they support? What can they support based off of the income that's coming into the county? Because what we're receiving money through is the Johnson County property tax and the vehicle fees. And it's kind of confusing as far as how money has come in and out of the county.
That's why my vehicle fees are so much.
Right? As the county collects these funds, then they turn around and they distribute checks monthly. And there's always months that, you know, we've received a monthly check for like $900. Not going to do us an awful lot of good, $900.
Sure.
But a couple months later, you might get one that's $35,000.
Well, that's
better.
So then
it starts to kind of build. this is where people can really get behind. If you've got big expenses during that low time when not a lot of money is coming in from the county, you better have some kind of reserve sitting there so that you can pay your bills and stay on top of it.
Sure.
And we have that. We've got that set up so we're able to pay all of our bills on time, to, you know, get everything taken care of. But the county's budget for us for this year was $172,220. That's through the property tax. And then they estimated about $10,000 for vehicle fees. Out of the 172, there's $72,690 remaining that hasn't yet come into the museum. Okay, now that's, I feel like that's not abnormal or out of the ballpark because we're halfway through the year. So $172,000 of that is less than half.
Sure.
So we're doing okay in that sense. When it came to the question of replacing our third position, I think that there's concern. What we're being told is there's so much concern about the county's valuation that they're looking to cut anywhere they possibly can. So our third person, our budget of $172,000 is very small, and it's very small within the realm of the county, but it's still on their chopping block. That's unfortunately, I guess, the way of
so they figured out you're working with two people now. Why can't you just keep doing that?
Well, there's the question of sanity.
No, I hear you. We're, you know, there's only a couple of us on air here at the station right now kind of doing the same thing. You lose people, and then the people in charge of how much money do we want to spend have to kind of weigh the pros and the cons mm-hmm. as to whether or not they want to spend that money. And what they don't, well, maybe they realize, but maybe not take into so much account sometimes is how much you put on the people that are still there.
Yeah.
Because they have to keep on taking on more and more whenever you have less staff.
That's exactly, yeah. You know, we went from 5 to 3, and now we're currently with 2. So those other jobs don't just flutter away in the wind. Things still need to happen, which just means that the workload increases exactly like what you're saying.
Pick up a plunger and go to work.
Right, right. I lost my train of thought there. It sailed out of that station.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I threw a joke out there and threw you off.
So that's okay.
The new position, are you currently accepting applications? What exactly is the position?
We will be in about a day. I've just got to get it typed up and put out on our website.
Basically, we're looking for someone who can come in and do a little bit of everything.
Yes. Certainly running the store is a part of it, or helping to run the store is a part of it, because Jennifer and I have been working on that. Hustle.
Sure.
But there's a lot more to it than that. We would really love to have somebody who has some museum knowledge, history, background, because you're going to be dealing with that. We've got some pretty amazing volunteers who run the front desk, and some of them have come to us with a background of already knowing a lot of Johnson County history, and some of them didn't, and they learn it quickly because
sure.
you've got to, you know, that's what people are coming in for. And they're asking all kinds of questions, and
they expect people at the museum to know
history. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And we want to do our best to offer that kind of customer service, because we know that's what brings people back to the museum. And it's also what encourages people to come back or to stay longer in Buffalo. And if we can help facilitate that, then we're doing our job.
So you kind of mentioned a couple of things, someone that, you know, maybe knows the history a little bit, that sort of thing. What are the other requirements, or, you know, what are you looking for from the applicants?
We would really love to have somebody who has collections experience, but I know that that's maybe not as likely. And the reason I say that we would like that is because collections work has all but ceased to happen. We've got a couple of folks, volunteers, and that are doing their best to work on it, but it's amazing how it builds up. You know, if somebody brings in a donation of a box of photographs, and you've got to go through and process each one, and there's maybe 200 photographs in there, that's a lot of time. There's a physical aspect to going through all of them, numbering them, cataloging them, and then scanning or photographing the item, putting it into our database, sending out donor forms. tracking the donor forms to see if they actually got a signature and were sent back. All that kind of stuff is time consuming, but really necessary, because if you have someone come in to do research and you're standing there going, well, I know I've got something on this topic, but I can't pull it up for you because it's been sitting waiting to be processed for 5 years. You're the museum.
Yeah.
You're supposed to have that. That's a part of the job. And that will be a part of the job regardless of, sure, you know, experience for applicants, because that's what we need done and that's what's going to have to happen. So I've been kind of mulling over what the title should be for this position. And the best I can come up with is staff, museum staff.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you're just going to be a part of it.
Yeah. Okay. And so getting a little bit off of that topic, what's kind of the current exhibit you guys have down there? What can people come and check out at the museum?
We still have our exhibit up about the Wyoming state flag. 2017 was the 100-year anniversary of the creation of the flag, and we have one of the first ones that was made. It was purchased by the state of Wyoming for their official ceremonies.
What kind of condition is that in at this point?
It's actually in really good condition, but that's because it was sent off to a professional textile conservator a few years ago when the economy was doing a little better, and we had funds in our budget for conservation because it cost over $12,000.
To make it all nice again?
Mm-hmm, to stabilize it.
Oh, okay.
Museum conservation is really an amazing kind of topic. And if I had any kind of science brain, I would have loved to have gone into it. But
I was going to say, sounds like pretty lucrative business.
I think it could be.
Yeah.
Except people tend, you find that people tend to really specialize in one media or another. Like conservators might specialize in taxidermied items, which they're kind of their own little ballpark of old poisons and things. This particular person that we use was in New Orleans, and she specializes in textiles, but even more narrow focus on flags. She's spent a lot of time working on Civil War flags, Revolutionary War flags, anything you can imagine. Massive ones that are bigger than, you know, the building.
Sure.
It's pretty cool stuff. So we knew when we sent it to her that we were sending it to the right person. And if you're going to do it, you need to do it right.
Yeah, if you're going to spend the money, you might as well go with the best.
You want to make sure that you're following your mission of taking care of those items. The flag is, our flag, is 6 feet long by 4 feet tall. Actually, a little bit more so when you add the gold fringe that surrounds it.
Okay.
And it's made out of silk, and silk is really a difficult material. You know, it's a natural fiber, and it tends to deteriorate, and there's not an awful lot you can do to stop it from deteriorating. You don't want to get it wet. You don't want it to freeze. It's very fragile.
It's like a gremlin, all these rules.
Mm-hmm.
Can't feed it after midnight.
Right. ours was dyed, obviously, for the colors of the flag, the red, white, and blue. The white was actually painted on to the flag itself, hand-painted, so that really intricate and cool Wyoming state seal with all of the three people standing in the wording and all that, that was all hand-painted, as was the bison in which it sits. And that paint, after 100 years or almost, was flaking off. As folks know that live here, it's very dry up here, and medias like paint tend to dry out, and then they release from whatever they were originally stuck to. So there was a lot of hand-painting infilling that happened with that. There were a lot of holes through the silk from previous display. It had been framed, and I don't know when, where, who, and I'm not passing judgment because I know that whoever did this was doing the best of their intentions at the time. But the material used, come to find out however many years later, probably 40 years later, was not great material because it was a particle board, which is full of things like formaldehyde. And that interacts with the paints and the dyes of the flag and the material of the silk. So when we actually took it out, you could see a ghosted image of where the particle board, everything had changed. You could totally, very clearly see the flag in the particle board. It's not really a good sign. And the glass was
Did you keep that piece of particle board?
No. No. We got rid of that. The flag now, if people have seen the exhibit or if they want to come in and see it, it's framed again so that it can be mounted on the wall. It's framed and surrounded by all archival type materials. So these are things that don't have dyes, they don't have glues, they don't have all of those substances that create a bad environment for it down the road. It has a UV plexiglass front, even though our museum doesn't have any windows, so we don't have to deal with natural light.
Just in case.
That extra step of adding that UV layer, it made sense at the time. Just get this done, get it done right. In the old framing, the fringe had been glued with like a hard epoxy to make it stand up on the top. And the conservator went through and removed as much of that epoxy as she could. For her method to make the fringe stand up and look so pretty, she stitched every single piece of fringe individually.
Now I see why it costs so much.
Yeah. You're talking
that's a lot of work.
Really detailed work. And it did turn out beautiful. She did great work.
I thought you were going to say they use like Aquanet hairspray or something.
You know, in the past, I bet that's been tried. But no professional conservator would do that. Not now.
And if people want to come check out the exhibit or the store or anything else, what are your current hours?
We're there Monday through Friday from 9 to 4 is when we're open. Not this next Monday. That's a holiday, and we're going to take the holiday off. That exhibit will be up into March, and then we're going to be taking that down, hopefully, and working on our next one. You know, we're still making plans. We're still trying to follow the mission of the museum through our interpretation, education, our programming, our exhibits. But we also know realistically that as we get smaller, some things are going to be cut back. But we are still working on exhibits. And one of the biggest reasons that we're able to do that is we have an exhibits committee that's more than half volunteers. And those volunteers, you know, we have volunteers who run the front desk for us a couple days a week. We have volunteers who help with the exhibits, who help with the collections, who help with the publications. We couldn't do all this if we didn't have those folks giving their own time, knowledge, experience, and dollars.
If someone wanted to be a volunteer, can they give you a call, set that up?
They can, and then we can visit about what they might be interested in, what's a good fit. We try to find the right place because collections volunteering, for instance, can be really tedious, and I've even had people tell me it's boring.
I don't like this.
Right. Usually that comes from high school kids, but it's very necessary work, so we certainly appreciate all of them. We're trying to work on a new exhibit for this summer about Fort McKinney photographs. The University of Kansas, their research library, has a scrapbook. We believe the photographs were probably taken by somebody in the military or somebody attached to the military, and there's about 130 images of Fort McKinney, and they're in Kansas, and we've gotten their permission to use these and put them on exhibit, and they're pictures that we hadn't seen, so I think it'll be a fun, mostly two-dimensional exhibit.
Cool. And again, we're talking with Sylvia Bruner, the director at Gatchel Museum. Sylvia, thank you so much for taking the time here today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. This is Classic Country, 1450 AM and 103.5 FM, KBBS. This is Community Speaks, being brought to you by The Prescription Shop on 4th Street.